Good afternoon. I'm calling this meeting of the Tax Committee to order for February 22nd. First item on the agenda is we're going to adopt the minutes. Do I have a motion to move the minutes of February 20th?
Chair Gomez, I move adoption of the minutes from the February 20th meeting.
Vice Chair Norris has moved to that we adopt the minutes. Is there any discussion on the motion? All those in, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, please say no. Motion carries. The minutes for February 20th, 2024 are adopted. All right, so we're going to talk renter's credit today. First, we're going to go to House Research. Welcome back, Mr. Williams. We have copies of the slides in our packets.
Chair Gomez and members, I'm Sean Williams from House Research. I'm going to talk briefly, sort of describe the policy with regard to the renter's credit that was enacted last year at a very high level. So Chapter 64, last year's tax bill, converted the renter's credit from a standalone refund program to a refundable income tax credit. In addition to the sort of administrative change, there's also a change to the income measure that was used to calculate the credit. So previously there was a measure of income called household income used to calculate the credit. Household income starts with adjusted gross income but includes a number of forms of non-taxable income, so income that's not subject to federal or state income taxes but does count towards your income for the purposes of calculating your renter's credits and your property tax refunds. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more on my next slide. The change in administration was effective for tax year 2024. So that means in August of this year, renter's credits are going to be distributed through the sort of same mechanism as in, you know, if they were under old law. So they're going to be distributed, filed as standalone forms on the M1PR, paid out in April. Beginning in spring 2025 or winter 2025 might be more accurate in Minnesota, the renter's credits will be filed and claimed as part of the income tax system. So it'll be a refundable income tax credit for tax year 2024. And then the following August, the renter's credits will no longer be paid out as part of the property tax refund program. Unless people are filing late income tax returns, you're not going to have credits paid out in August. I wanted to also mention the legislature appropriated some funds in the bill for tax credit outreach. So these this is funds that we use to sort of promote the availability of the credit and sort of let the public know about the change in how it's being administered. I wanted to briefly talk about household income because that's just a one of the substantive changes aside from how it's administered in the law. So the old law definition of household income included all non-taxable incomes. There's a few exceptions specified of forms of non-taxable income that were not counted towards household income. I want to mention, I haven't looked at the numbers for this recently, but in terms of the revenue effect, about 60%, the last time I looked at it, which was I think in 2022, about 60% of the non-taxable income included in household income or the revenue effect of that was Social Security benefits. So Social Security that was not subject to federal tax but was added back for the purposes of calculating the renter's credit. I have on the slide, and I think included in your packets, are the instructions from the M1PR that sort of describe how this household income measure was calculated under current law. You can see there's a lot of different kinds of non-taxable income. There's certain scholarships, certain retirement distributions also that are considered non-taxable income for the purposes of this credit. And we do hear, as nonpartisan staff, a lot of constituent questions about those kinds of non-taxable income. So those instructions describe this situation under old law, but starting next year, the measure of income used to calculate the credit will be adjusted gross income, and then you get reductions on your adjusted gross income if you're you have dependents or if you're a senior or if you're disabled. So that's the end of my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Representative Swedzinski has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a question in general. So are you doing any calculations as far as the genuine tax impact? So when in the tax, we've heard stories in the past to say if it's, you know, the tax rebate or the tax credit represents, you know, 20% of the rent. Have you done analysis to see does the 20% accurately represent the property tax implications of those rents paid, or is it over, is it under? Like, what is the general consensus on that?
Mr. Williams, I'm not sure that's a question for you or for somebody else, but Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez and Representative Swedzinski, there was a study that the Department of Revenue completed, I think gosh, I want to say I think it was last updated in 2011, but it could have been more recent than that. I know there's a couple different versions of it. And I can pull that up just in a moment. But I think that generally the percentage of rent constituting property taxes in that study sort of varied by the region of the state. I think that the statewide number, I think that the renter's credit statutorily assumes that 17% of rent paid was rent constituting property taxes. And I think that the statewide number was lower than that by a couple percentage points, is my memory. But I get you the specific numbers in a moment.
You good, Swinsky?
Usually.
That's a good question. I think, like, so does that mean, Mr. Williams, that like they would go with basically the higher number, which would likely be in the metro, and just apply that across the board, even if there's some regional variation, you kind of go with the more generous number?
Chair Gomez and members, so the program in statute just says assume that 17% of rent paid is rent constituting property taxes, and that's what goes into the calculation of the renter's credit. So that number could be adjusted by the legislature as sort of a policy choice, but I think that when they did a study, you know, several years ago, the statewide average was a little bit lower than that 17% number.
Great, thank you. Any other questions or comments before we move on? All right, not seeing any. Thank you, Mr. Williams. Next up, we're going to talk a little bit about implementation of the renter's credit. We're going to hear both from the department and then from some people who are more out in the, well, I won't say more out in the field than you guys, but there's outreach that happens from inside the department, and then there's also Mr. Williams mentioned those outreach grants that the department gives out to community-based organizations. So we're going to hear first from Jake Funice. I hope I said your name right. Excellent. Welcome to the committee. Thanks so much. Please introduce yourself as you're getting started with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jake Funice. I supervise a team of outreach coordinators and communication specialists at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And we're going to be talking about the Minnesota property tax refund today, specifically some legislative changes, how revenue has implemented those changes, and what our plans are for communicating them with the public. So before we dive into the details, here's a brief agenda. We'll start with some catch-up details, talk about the timeline that we have for the project, as well as our outreach strategy. So before we dive in, it's good to get everybody on the same page with a few bits of information. So first, the Minnesota property tax refund is available to both homeowners and renters. And the refund is calculated on a sliding scale based on income and rent or property taxes. For today, we'll mostly be focusing on the renters portion, as we've said. And renters receive a certificate of rent paid from their landlord each year, summarizing the amount of rent they paid for that year. So starting in tax year 2024, this will be calendar year 2025, renters will claim their refund as an income tax credit on Form M-1, individual income tax, which you just heard from Matt. Homeowners will continue to claim the refund on Form M-1-PR, Minnesota Property Tax Refund. And let's walk through some key events over the last few years that led up to this change. During the 2017 Minnesota legislative session, a new law was passed allowing revenue to require landlords to submit copies of CRPs to the department. One point of clarification here, I'll say landlords a lot in my presentation, this is all-encompassing managing agents, anybody who is responsible for a property. We began the work to lay the foundation for the project, organizing teams internally and putting together our project plan. Jumping forward to 2019, we had an early version of the system ready, and we wanted to start getting feedback from customers. We collected feedback using surveys and usability testing on the system with landlords throughout the state. And toward the end of 2019, our new system went live, allowing business customers to complete and submit CRPs to us. At that time, individuals with a social security number or individual tax ID could not register and access our e-services system. Moving right along, our next stop is in 2021. Another new law was passed by the Minnesota legislature giving revenue the authority to require individual taxpayer IDs when registering for our e-services system. And this is what gave us what we needed to move forward with the final phase of our project. So fast forward to 2023. Internally, we're working on system enhancements, which would allow individuals to register and submit CRPs to us. We also kicked off our outreach strategy to landlords. We identified a network of stakeholders, including public, private, and nonprofit partners, to begin sharing this change to e-services and landlord requirements. So just a few examples of folks that we worked with during our outreach campaign included Minnesota Housing, the Department of Health, the League of Minnesota Cities, and the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association, and more. In addition to the outreach work, we also began offering e-services training sessions to help folks get familiar with the new system and to share info about those changing requirements. At the end of 2023, we officially launched the enhancements to our e-services system, which will now allow all property owners and managing agents to register and submit CRPs to us. So now that we've walked through the past few years, let's start focusing on what's next. We have some exciting work ahead of us as we prepare for some of these big transitions for landlords and renters. Lots of work planned this year, including some data analysis within our system, gathering stakeholder feedback, additional system enhancements, and lots of outreach and communication. We'll also be working towards transitioning the renter's portion of the refund to the Minnesota income tax return. And before I get into any more details about our outreach strategy, let's quickly look ahead at 2025. In 2025, landlords will be required to use our e-services system to submit CRPs to us. Renters will claim their portion of the property tax refund on a Minnesota income tax return, even if they do not have a filing requirement, federal or state. Homeowners will continue claiming the property tax refund on Form M1PR. This is going to be a big change for a lot of folks. Revenue is preparing to support everyone impacted by these changes throughout the year and beyond. And let's talk a little bit more about those plans. So as part of our implementation plan for these law changes, we'll have a robust outreach strategy to ensure we're reaching as many folks about this change as possible. One important note before we get into this strategy is we're in the middle of an income tax filing season. Renters are currently using the M1PR form. So our outreach strategy will really ramp up later this summer and into fall to avoid confusing any current filers. We've also already began our work developing resources and training. This includes everything from forms, instructions, web content, outreach materials, and training content. A key part of our strategy will be utilizing our stakeholder network. It's very similar to our strategy in communicating about the new Minnesota Child Tax Credit. We're hosting spaces for our partners to learn from us, get resources, and distribute those through their channels and networks. This allows us to use the trust and relationship established by these stakeholders to get our message out. Another part of our strategy involves community engagement. We want to understand what our customers are thinking, what their needs are, and potential barriers to a successful implementation. We do this through a variety of methods, including surveying, focus groups, and roundtables. And lastly, issuing direct mailings to impacted individuals. This has been a strategy that we've used several times in the last decade, and it's proven to generate engagement with the topic and content. These strategies will allow us to reach as many folks as possible with this information. However, we have identified a few key stakeholders and messages that are worth noting today. The first key stakeholder group are our M1PR only filers. These are folks with low or no income, and they're not required to file a federal or state income tax return, but they are eligible for the Minnesota property tax refund. These folks will likely need the most support transitioning to a new form, filing for their refund next year. The next stakeholder group are unconnected landlords. These are folks who either choose to live without internet connectivity or live in places with limited or no connectivity. We'll be communicating these changes and an alternative option for them to comply with our new landlord requirements. Lastly, one important change to communicate on this topic is the timing of refunds. Renters have been used to receiving refunds in July, August, and September, and beginning next year when they file on their income tax return, Refunds will come much earlier, depending on when they file. So this will also be an adjustment for folks who are used to receiving two refunds a year, one for their income taxes and one for their rent. These will now be combined, issued earlier in the year, and may impact household budgets. We've got an exciting year ahead of us at the Department of Revenue, making enhancements to our CRP submission system and communicating to tens of thousands of renters what they should expect when filing for their refund next year. Thank you, Chair Gomez and representatives. That's the end of my presentation.
Thank you so much. Going to member questions, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Something the testifier from the Department of Revenue said, I was a little bit confused by it. He said, you have an exciting year coming up in the Department of Revenue. I thought every year was exciting at the Department of Revenue. Just a thought.
Thank you for the thought. Agreed. We all agree. Best committee, best department.
There you
go. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the experience of filing will be like for people who are used to just being the M1PR filers? Like, what will the form be like? When will they be expected to submit it?
Yeah, yes. Thank you, Chair Gomez. So I think they'll be filing an income tax return instead of a property tax refund return. So there's just a change from the start. As far as when and behavior changes, they're going to be looking to file those returns around the same time they typically do. So for many renters, they get their certificate of rent paid January 31st or a few weeks before that. They're rushing to their tax preparer office or their free tax preparation site or signing into their software to get that return done. So they won't likely be filing at different times of the year. It will just be on a different form. The big change in timing is the refund. The refunds would not be issued by revenue previously until August, September-ish for renters. But the big change will be those refunds will go out with income tax refunds whenever those returns are filed during the filing season, February to April.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate that info. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I have a question about implementation also, but on the other side with the property owners. I noticed, I think last year you rolled out the e-services system, and I was just curious if you have an update on how many folks have signed up and, you know, what percentage that is and, you know, kind of what the work ahead looks like.
Mr. Finice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Lee and Chair Gomez. I don't have the data right in front of me, but I do know that we are seeing the system used quite a bit this year. We rolled it out December of 2023 and started our communication and saw a great use of the system for a non-required year. So I'm happy to follow up with numbers on that, although they are changing every day. So,
great. Thank you. Representative Brand.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. I have a question. Actually, two questions. The first question I have is that I went to the slide here, the Minnesota Property Tax Refund catch-up slide, and it said that landlords have to have their CRPs to the tenants by 1/31. My question is, as people start going and migrating away from what they were doing to this new system, and then all this information is collected, including emails for those landlords, is there going to be some sort of an email generated to the landlords going forward as kind of a reminder that this is coming up? And you know, the Secretary of State's office does it for small business owners when it's time to renew their license in the state of Minnesota. So I was just thinking along that same lines, is there something we could do to kind of help folks so that way we're not catching them off guard? And then my second question, and I'm sure you can answer this one too, after 131, you know, slipped their mind, went to the hospital, whatever the case was that they weren't able to do this by 131, is there going to be a way to access this portal going forward to give that to the tenant? And is there going to be any leeway from the standpoint of maybe any implications there, fines or anything like that?
Mr. Finice.
Yes, thank you, Representative Chair Gomez. So starting with your first question, the good thing about this system that we have is this is going to be an amazing tool to communicate with our stakeholders. So while we don't have plans for a reminder every year at this point, it's certainly capable within the system, and we can take that back as feedback as a really important tool to help remind folks of those responsibilities. As far as if they do, if they happen to miss the deadline, by statute, I believe there is a penalty for landlords for not submitting. It's per certificate of rent paid, not issued that they were required to. But I believe your question was more about access to the system. So throughout the year, a landlord will be able to access this new system and do whatever it is that they need to do, create CRPs, submit CRPs, what have you. As far as renter access go, that is still something that we're discussing internally about how we want to handle renters having access to the system and their records as submitted by the property owners.
Representative Brand.
Thank you. Chair Gomez, just as a follow-up statement, I guess, I know that there are some people that are bad actors, and that's the way it goes, and that's why I think those penalties are in place. I just think that, you know, for your average person, there's a lot of things to keep track of, and so I just want to make sure that we're being as much customer-oriented or customer-facing as possible, just so we can kind of avoid some of that friction between government and the people that we are regulating in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Brand. Mr. Finice, could you just tell us a little bit more about the penalty kind of schedule? And then I heard Rep. David say something about a postmark. Like, is the January 31st? I'm not eavesdropping. I'm sorry. You're just talking too loud. No.
Too loud.
but
Mrs. Blakesley.
Is it like you have to receive it by 1/31? Is postmark okay? And then, like, what are those fees looking like after that date? If you could just tell us about that, or the penalties or whatever.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Gomez. So, I again, don't quote me on the exact specifics, but I do believe it is a penalty amount per certificate of rent paid that they're required by law to issue. And I want to say it's $100 per occurrence. And I'm sorry, what was the...
Oh, it's just about if it's like a postmark or like must be in hand.
Yes. So I believe the language states that the requirement is that landlords issue a copy of their certificate of rent paid to their tenant by the deadline. So as long as it was in the mail, in an email, what have you, and it's not required to go on paper, it can be emailed. Okay. So, yeah, it's the 31st postmark.
Great. Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Oh, you know what? I'm good.
Yeah, okay, thanks. Great. Representative Joy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In this report we have here that's called Minnesota Budget Project, who receives the renter's credit? It says in the back here there's $3.6 million to unknown and other. Can we get a little more definition of the unknown, or why would we?
Yeah, we're going to, Representative Joy, so we're going to have a Ms. Madden up from the Minnesota Budget Project, okay. So maybe we can, we'll ask her. To make note of that question and address it when she's up.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Anybody else? All right, looks like we're good. Thank you so much for your presentation. All right, up next, we have Ellen Smart. Thanks for being here. Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez and committee members. My name is Ellen Smart. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid's Legal Services Advocacy Project, which provides legislative advocacy for Minnesota's legal aid programs. Legal Aid has long been part of the community of advocates that supports renters' credits as part of our work to advocate on behalf of low-income Minnesotans, including youth, elders, and people with disabilities. And present issues including housing and economic stability. Homeline, which is one of our partners on this issue, surveyed renters about the difference that the renter's credit makes in their lives. Unfortunately, Homeline is not able to be here today because of a scheduling conflict, but I'd like to share what they have learned from their clients and how the renter's credit reduces some of the financial strain. Renters report that when they receive their renter's credit, they're able to purchase basic necessities such as school supplies, clothing, non-perishable foods, spices. In one case, one of Homeline's clients noted that they buy the spices to add to their watered-down food. Toiletries, one tenant specifically stocked up on toilet paper, cleaning and laundry supplies. But sometimes the renter's credit is used for more expensive items that are near impossible to save for on limited budgets, such as car repairs, license tabs, dental care, eyeglasses, and medication. One home line client said this about how they use the renter's credit. It's used to pay for basic necessities, pure and simple. I use it to pay for prescriptions or bills I cannot pay otherwise, or I buy the groceries. Without the renter's credit, I have to forego prescriptions or food. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today and the importance of the renter's credit to our clients.
Thank you for your testimony and for sharing those stories of Minnesotans who benefit from this credit. Is there any questions? Not seeing any. Thank you so much for being with us. Next up, Ms. Madden.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. Sorry, I'm getting over a cold. I hope my voice hangs in there. Appreciate the opportunity to testify today about the changes to the renter's credit included in the 2023 tax bill and some considerations as we get to implementation in 2025. I'll emphasize some of the points that Mr. Finice shared with you earlier. We know that Minnesota renters want safe, affordable homes for themselves and their families, but that some folks earning low wages or on fixed incomes do struggle to afford the cost of housing and other basic necessities. The renter's credit is one of the strategies that the state uses to address affordable housing challenges. And you do have in your packet, as was mentioned, a handout that shows the importance of the renter's credit for each Minnesota county. In Greater Minnesota in particular, it is an important strategy for ensuring that our seniors can afford to continue living in their communities. The renter's credit provides a financial boost to the Minnesotans who receive it, as well as their local communities as they spend their refunds on groceries and other basics. The big changes to the renter's credit that are included in the 2023 tax bill build on a history of actions taken by the legislature to increase participation in the state's property tax refunds. And it is, I think, the biggest change to the renter's credit that I've seen in more than 20 years working on tax policy. We and others in the advocacy community were very excited about these renter's credit changes because of a number of positive impacts, which include nearly 120,000 Minnesota households are predicted to start claiming the credit because of the move onto the income tax form. These are folks who already qualify for the renter's credit, but have not been successfully navigating the process for filing for it. These changes make it much simpler for renters to navigate and for the Department of Revenue to process the renter's credit because of the simplified definition of income that removes another barrier to folks filing for the credits they qualify for, and the dollars get into renters' pockets sooner. It's also very important to know that these are changes that many renters are interested in as well. Last February, our partners at Prepare and Prosper surveyed the folks that they served for a couple of weeks and got feedback from about 135 renters. Nearly 70% said they would like to claim their renter's credit earlier in the year, and 60% said they would prefer to claim their renter's credit along with their state income tax return. So there's a lot of positives from these policy changes. But big changes can present some challenges, and there's some important components of implementation that will need attention and action to minimize negative impacts. You've heard about all the good work that the Department of Revenue is planning, and I think this is also a situation where nonprofit and community organizations really can play that role as trusted messengers, collaborating with the department and leveraging philanthropic and charitable dollars to support this implementation. So the kind of key issues are, first of all, that we don't want to lose anyone in making this transition. So education and outreach and tax filing support will be needed to make sure that all renters successfully make the transition to filing on the income tax form, with special attention to those who currently only file for the renter's credit. And secondly, we need to make sure that renters know about this timing shift. As you've heard, this is going to be a big culture shift for renters who are used to getting their property tax refunds later in the year, and many folks use them for very specific expenses. So, for example, because of the current timing, we often hear about families using their renter's credit for back-to-school expenses. So it will create an economic challenge for Minnesotans if they don't realize they got their renter's credit earlier in the year and they're waiting for that check to come in the fall for those planned expenses. So getting the word out so folks recognize that they did already receive those dollars earlier in the year will be important. And it will be important that our free tax preparation providers and other community groups have the resources to respond to the increased demands as we shift more folks into filing for their renter's credit during the income tax filing season. And these tax preparers take the time to educate the folks they serve about the timing shift. I could address the technical question.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go look in the weeds of the data that I get from Department of Revenue. Off the top of my head, I think some reasons why people would not be assigned to a particular county is if they were perhaps part-year residents or if they used their tax preparer's address on their return and that tax preparer was not in Minnesota. But I'll dig into the weeds and follow up.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. It's kind of like a lot of people. It's 23,000 households, so. Great. Yeah, and Ms. Madden will just send that over to Patrick McQuillan, and then we can distribute it to everybody. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I do have a quick question. You mentioned tax preparers. You're talking about community. Okay. But a lot of people do their taxes on TurboTax and these other free things, and sometimes if there's something odd, then you have to pay for it. If there's something different, right? So do we know yet, the Department of Revenue, whether this is going to force that oddness where it's not free anymore? Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Ms. Madden, and can call have the department come up too.
I think that's a high-level answer is that actually one of the benefits of moving on to the income tax form is that filing for the renter's credit now, I believe, will be more supported by those tax software where I think, I know I've had the experience where sometimes it's just a pop-up window that says, hey, you might qualify for this, follow this link and figure it out. But whether it, I can't imagine why it would turn a free return into a paid return, but I would defer to the department on that.
Yeah, I know that in general that the department does do updates with all of those software companies each filing year to make sure that, you know, everything that has changed gets incorporated. But that's a good question. I don't know if anybody, if Ms. Bears wants to come up and share anything else. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Bears.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the legislative director at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Chair Gomez, to answer that question, you know, we do work with our software partners. We don't necessarily set the fees for what they charge to file their systems, but we do work with our VITA organizations and other folks who offer free filing for folks. And so those are the conversations that we'll probably have closer to next year when this goes on the M1.
Okay, if there's a way that we could get like a solid answer to Representative Anderson's question, though, because I think it's important, like yes or no, whether this will cause anybody to incur a fee on a return that would otherwise be free, I think that would be important information. So thank you. Is there anybody else who has any question or comment? All right, I'm not seeing any. Am I missing anything? I don't want to adjourn us again before I finish the agenda. Okay. I've got to check here. Okay, so our next hearing of Tax Committee is going to be Thursday, please note. So Tuesday are precinct caucuses, so there's no House business that day. Wednesday we will not be meeting, even though it's a little after the time when we could meet because, people will also be traveling back from their homes that day. Next hearing is going to be Thursday, February 29th, and we're going to be hearing a couple bills. And with that, we are adjourned.